listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers. This is podcast session number 14. I am joined, as always, by OJ and Adam. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
I'm good tonight.
I am doing great. Doing good.
It's great. I hope you guys are enjoying this beautiful, beautiful Saturday evening. Or not Saturday evening. St. Louis evening is what I went to say. I don't know why Saturday came into my mind.
I was going to say wishful thinking, perhaps. Maybe I wish it was the weekend, but we're not quite there yet. It'll be here soon. Not soon enough, though.
It's Thursday, and it's raining outside. So
yeah, it's rainy and cold, but, you know, I was going to say waiting around until next week when it'll be, like, you know, 80 degrees on Monday, and we'll all be, you know, outside in shorts. So
tornadoes.
Yeah, and tornadoes. Why not? Tornadoes and snow.
Yeah. Followed by a snowstorm and then some earthquakes and maybe even hurricane to mix into it.
Dare I say that, like the weather, the St. Louis sports are unpredictable as well. So
yeah,
I thought you were gonna say heating up.
Well, there you go. I was gonna say, they're heating up for some of our teams. You know, for the Battle Hawks
and side, right?
And for the positive side, we'll focus on the positive side. Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, there's the way more good than bad so far. That's awesome.
Yeah, there you go. We'll focus.
I tell you what, like, I love this though, because OJ is like the coalition here of just positive. Like, he's like, we're not rebuilding. Screw this crap. Like, he's like, I want to, you know, do whatever, like a retool. I don't want to do rebuild. And he put me at him like rebuild.
Just, he's such a politician. He's such a smooth politician over there. He's like, this is not a tax. This is not a tax hike. It's a repatriation of funds.
Well, I mean, that's where you're wrong, though. See, I didn't want to do a full rebuild because I'm afraid it's just going to turn us into the Edmonton Oilers or the Arizona Coyotes.
I was about to say, I think the Coyotes would probably be a better like comparison, right? Because like Edmonton now is starting to get like real good again, but you also have Connor McDavid and you have Draisaitl.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, we have Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou, two skilled players that won't play defense. That makes it so no one wants to play defense.
that is true.
Yeah. So I was gonna say the trade deadline is here.
Yeah. So the trade deadline for anybody. So today is. Excuse me. It is March 2nd. So we are 1 day away here from the trade deadline. That I think the deadline's at 4 p.m. Our time.
2 p.m. our time tomorrow.
Okay, I knew it was 3 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central time. So, yep. So you got a lot. You can get through the afternoon.
Yeah. But, you know, we obviously have some stuff from the Blues to talk about when it comes to the contract and trades and stuff like that before you talk about the deadline. So let's go ahead and jump right into it and start talking about a little bit of the Ivan Barbashev trade. For anybody that does not know, Ivan Barbashev is no longer a St. Louis Blue. He has gone to the Vegas Golden Knights. And essentially this trade was a one-for-one player. We gave Barbashev to the Vegas, and we got a prospect in Zach Dean. For anybody that does not know anything about Zach Dean, which is probably a lot of people, he's 20 years old. He was the first round pick, excuse me, in 21 for the Vegas Knights and number 30th overall. In the Q. MJHL, which is like a very high junior league. It's not like AHL or anything like that, but it's very high junior hockey because he's only 20. So he's going to be playing a lot of junior hockey. He's gotten 73 goals, 169 points in 166 games. He's actually been doing that for 4 years. He will be joining the AHL next season, it sounds like. Yeah. So just getting into it here too. Oh, there's actually two things that I want to talk real quick about. Dean as well. Give me 1 second because I actually had it pulled up. There was this is from Elite Prospects draft guide and the 20. So this was right before the draft. Essentially, this is what Elite Prospects were saying about him. Dean plays at a breakneck pace, stacking his skills as a handler and a passer on top of his skill skating ability to make plays without a moment's hesitation. His hands work independent of his feet. with his top arm free from his side, pushed out well in front of him to grant him much more maneuverability and as much as possible. If you get open, he'll get you the puck. It's just that simple. In fact, too, they gave him a rating here. So out of 10, his skating is, or excuse me, out of 8, his skating is a 6. His shooting is a 5. His passing is a 6. Puck handling, 6.5. Hockey sense, is a 6. Physical is a 5. Overall grade as an A. Projected was 1.12 for the points per game on the NHL level. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we don't know what it's going to be. So let's go ahead and just kind of get to some reactions here. OG, let's start with you. You know, what was your reaction to the Barbie trade? I know this is not necessarily what we had talked about in the prior session 13-12, when we were talking about Ivan Barbashev possibly being traded. But we did get a prospect out of it, and I kind of want to get your guys' opinions on what you think of the prospect.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of hoping for another first-round pick, but, I guess this player's fine. I mean, he's probably better than what you'd get with a late first-rounder anyway, so it's kind of not a bad deal. I mean, definitely whatever you read there was much more positive on him than what I was reading. What I was reading was like, basically, he's like a younger Barbashev, which isn't bad. Right. It's not a bad outcome. It's just, it's not really exciting.
Yeah. And the funny thing about that is I did read something very similar to that as well. I just thought that these were interesting notes from, people that have done, I think, a decent job of kind of being able to give good grades and stuff like that to good players. Yeah. But again, it all comes down to, can he do it at the NHL level, right? I mean, right now on the high juniors, on the high junior circuit, he's doing pretty well over point.
Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah, Nick.
He's in a baby league, like a league for young players. Like, they're just seeing how he gets when he's playing against like full grown men.
People yeah. have experience at the big show. Yeah.
Yeah, the AHL actually will be very telling, I think, as to how successful he'll be in the NHL.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Adam, you're definitely. Yeah, I was gonna say I definitely anticipate that he'll probably start in the season in the AHL. But he could obviously be pushing for a spot in camp and get maybe their call up, get up on the call up list eventually. But I think overall he's probably a solid B overall prospect. Looking at his stats and whatnot, he's like a mid tier player. Looking at some of his stats here, looks like he's not a dominant scorer, but he had 49 points in 38 games. When it comes to points per game, he ranked 12th overall in in that junior league that he's in, like you mentioned, 1.29 rate. So, he's like a middle of the line role, like a third line center probably, but we'll see. I mean, it just depends on like you OJ's mentioned how he develops in the AHL. So, I mean, coming to the Blues, obviously we are not the same organization that we really were before. We've made a lot of trades. We're obviously going and to, developing a younger team. With that in mind, I think there'll be a lot of development, that we'll see over the next few years. So I'm hopeful that, it'll pan out that, he'll be a good part of the team eventually.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, what Josh was saying about the passing, I didn't hear about that before. So that kind of makes me a little more excited about him. Basically, any player that's a good passer, I'm pretty stoked to see. So.
Well, and that definitely could unlock a player too. It could unlock Kyrou, and it could even unlock Thomas as well, because it could allow them to be able to be more creative in the offensive zone. We obviously saw the effect that Adam Oates had on Brett Hull. You know what I mean? Brett Hull, Hall of Famer without Adam Oates, but he was able to excel with Adam Oates in that lineup. You know what I mean? And being able to have Adam Oates who was an exceptional passer. Not necessarily a goal scorer, but he could definitely get the puck to open players. And, Brett Hull was obviously able to get into dirty areas and use his bigger frame to be able to, work in front of the net, be able to obviously get to the high slots and stuff like that as well. I'm very excited about it. And the other thing, too, they also have to look into this as well, right? Because OJ, you kind of mentioned, like, I wish we had a first round pick. This was a rental player. Ivan Barbashev is a free agent after the end of this year. He's an unrestricted free agent. He has not signed a new contract for Vegas at this point. Everybody's kind of in that are the rumor mill, obviously, but everyone's kind of projecting that he will go to the open market. So I think that
I definitely think so. I mean, from what the conversations that Barbie and Berube were having, it sounds like he was ready to go to the open market. He was telling him that he wanted to, you know, to explore, you know,
not that the market and see come what it was. Back.
No, right. But I think he definitely wants to test the market for sure. And so, yeah, if you know a guy who's ready to test the market, you might as well try to get something for him, right? So
yeah, and a first round pick prospect, I think, is actually pretty good for a rental player then too.
I think look at it for sure. I don't hate this trade by any means.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The pick you would get from Vegas is probably going to be low enough that this guy you got, like, he's much more of a sure thing of actually helping your organization than that pick is.
Yeah, so for sure. I do like having that that certainty of we know we're going to pick up somebody good for sure in that sense. So
exactly. Well,
and kind of OJ, to your point of what you said before too, and like how you don't want to go into a full rebuild, right? So say we trade away Barbie for just a first round pick. All right, let's just say that. So now we got four first round picks, and let's say we sit on them. Well, now like you're kind of giving up the here and now, and you might be, you know, for 3 or 4 years later on, because kids that you're going to be drafting, they're going to be 17, 18 playing junior hockey, and don't want to rush them. You know, they're not, these kids aren't, I mean, maybe they are, who knows? They're not going to be Connor McDavid, who can come into the league at the age of 18 and all of a sudden just excel. They're not Ovechkin. Yeah. They're not Sidney Crosby. The only one that's like that right now that we've seen as a sure thing is Connor Bedard, right?
Yeah.
That's the reason why he's going to be that number one overall, is so highly touted at this point. But you know, and the Blues are very notorious for not rushing players along. They want them to develop and stuff, like kind of like the Cardinals organization. I think that's kind of like St. Louis MO.
Yeah.
What I mean,
that's how you most successfully develop young people.
Yeah. Like, compared to Vegas, most on the other hand,
people need to go to an environment where they can at least have some success, because, you know, you take some kid that's 18 years old and throw him in the AHL, he's just going to get mugged the entire time.
They're still growing, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah, even as there's just some mean dudes in the AHL. You know, there's some 29-year-olds in that league that can't wait to just mess some kid up. So
that's why they're there. You know what I mean? We've seen June.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? Exactly. So,
and that's the thing. That's the difference between obviously the Blues and Vegas. You know, the Knights have always been, you know, they're always the, you know, the in the moment, they're in the now business, whereas they're not necessarily focused on the future that per se. Yeah. So I think that was a good trade off for us. So,
yeah, I mean, as far as I can tell, they're going into full rebuild mode anyway. That's why I want the picks, because like they traded away I mean, I know all those guys were UFAs, but you traded away like everybody that made you good. So it kind of feels like, you know, we kind of are going into just a full rebuild.
Well, yeah,
so,
there's only how many are left now? Like 5 or 6 are left from the I think it's down to 6 now from the cup winning roster in 2019. Yeah. So. So yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
We're purging.
I'd be like, oh, you want to trade Kyrou? Okay, like, just make sure the players know you're serious about back checking. Like, do it.
Yeah.
Like, you can get some good assets for him too while you're at it, and maybe try and get some other guy that will play both ends of the ice.
Well, Jane, it's super funny too. So, you know, obviously Berube had his comments. It comes out and it's just like, you know, they're not giving effort. He's like, these guys are getting paid way too much money to do this. Oh. I think we even talked about this last session.
Alexei Torpchenko is my next captain, by the way.
I'm telling you right now. So that kid is showing me a lot of maturity, and he, you know, he plays the game the right way too, right? And he's not the greatest, but he's trying. He's like,
not insulted by him. Some of the effort he sees out there, I guarantee you.
It, listen,
those guys are going to be
not to put this on him, but he's like an Eric Brewer. You know, he's not the best player on the ice, right? But he's got the mentality to go out there and work. You know what I mean? And people hated Brewer, but I don't know why. I think it's just because we had the captaincy for the Blues was always a phenomenal player for a long time. And then you have Eric Brewer, who's obviously, you know, no one. But I loved Eric Brewer's work ethic, and I loved his leadership ability, too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And that's what a captain should be, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah. We would love to have an Eric Brewer right now in our, you know, in the locker room. But but I thought that Robert Thomas's – it was just, you know, essentially like – his not rebuttal, but like his response was like, yeah, I don't believe in that at all. I don't understand why he said that. He's like, we're giving it all, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, if that's truly you giving it all, then you don't deserve to be in the NHL. Just saying. Because, OJ, to your point, it's back-checking. Simple.
Yeah, they've got the McDavid Draisaitl complex. We don't do defense. We're here to score. You know, like, come on, dude. That's not how you win cups. And Robert Thomas should know better. He was there for one. Like,
exactly. Yeah, and I think that we put a lot of stock in Kyrou, and I just don't think he's mature enough yet. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, so that's the other thing. I think these guys are given this leadership position just much too early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is what it is, you know, at this point. It's going to be real interesting to see what, like, again, if Dean does make the team next year, because you kind of pointed that out, Adam. Since we're kind of in a younger team now, maybe he does get some chances. Who knows, right? Actually,
yeah.
I'm down for it. Yeah.
The thing is, they should have, you know, with Thomas, I think that he definitely misconstrued what Berube was trying to do, and that was to light a fire under their ass, you know, and not get offended, but to get them fired up, you know.
Yeah, listen, not have the millennial mentality. Yeah, thank you. Oh. Because, like, again, as you said, like, oh, he's hurting my feelings. That's kind of what it felt like to me. I'm like, okay, now, like, there's two things to this. One, you're just lying through your teeth to try to save face and be like, we're trying our hardest out there. And two, quite honestly, and I hate to sound like this and be so crass, but he sounded like a little bitch.
Yeah.
You know, like, he doesn't like me or whatever. And it's just like, what are you going to do? Have mom and dad call him up and say, you need to be at nice.
It truly feels that way, honestly, especially after the fact that they're playing like little bitches right now anyway. I mean, it's simply that.
You guys are digging in way too hard.
Well, dude, if I was Berube, I would be laying into the team.
You're giving a whole nother... You're like putting words between the lines for Robert Thomas.
Well, I have to agree.
But again, that was just my interpretation.
Berube needs to lay into them. This is unacceptable, you know, to give no effort to, you know, literally just to not put out, you know, where they say put it all out the ice, but we're not seeing that. At some point, you know, he's going to get frustrated. Emotions will flare. I mean, emotions flared in 2019, you know, in December, you know, when things were going to absolute shit. The teams were fighting everything else during practice. People were really digging into each other. When you're not playing well, emotions run high. And especially whenever it feels that people are not. If you're not helping each other, if you're just not giving it your all, you know, so they'll get over it.
We do want to be fair to those guys is that the rest of the forward group hasn't done it either. Like for the most part, the forwards this year have just felt a little lazy to me, honestly. So it's not just those two, but
no, it's not. They just need to kind of lead the way.
They're the leadership
role. Exactly. Yeah. They're on the microscope at this point because they're the only few left. They're making a lot of money on their contracts. Yes, they're inheriting a bad situation with the issue with Vladimir Tarasenko not wanting to be here, with effort issues and injury issues for Roar. So I think that they're inheriting a bad situation, but it's the only at this point they're thrust into a leadership role. But to me, again, you cannot respond that way, right? So like so to put it in this way, like there was a time on a hockey team I was playing with that we knew against a few teams that were in the league that we were better than, right? We just knew it, and like we were like these guys were having issues like controlling the puck, making plays. So when we got to where we were comfortable, we would go to the bench and say Augusta, Augusta, Augusta. What that means is golf course. Play like you're already in the golf course. And I feel like that's kind of what they're doing here, is that they're not playing because they feel like they're not going to be able to make the playoffs. So they're not worried about their pride at this point. They're playing golf course hockey, if you know what I mean.
Well, no, that's accurate. I mean,
yeah.
And pride is like the best word for it, too, because if they had any pride, they would be pissed off the way they're losing.
Yeah, they'd be fighting it.
You know, if you don't play with pride, then I don't know what you're doing. You know, like
if losing like this does not bother you, if you are just like, you know, like calm and collected the entire time, it's not bothering you, then you got an issue. Just like everybody, not everybody, but there's people out there that are giving Binnington, and I've talked about this so many times, and I need to let it go and get off of it. But people don't like Binnington's quote unquote antics. It's because he's getting pissed off. He's tired of losing this way. He's tired of getting left on an island a lot, and his pride is shown.
Yep.
And I think that
I would be just equally as pissed as well. Whenever you have your defensemen are just leaving you wide open, you know, I would be pissed as well. So
that's what I'm saying. You see flashes of it from some players, but then they kind of just like Falk. I'd say Falk. He's been a guy that said something before, but then you know, nothing comes about from it. And
exactly.
You know, you still have your Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou guys as the quote unquote leaders of the team and shit. Now, you know, no one listens to you. So it's like, well, might as well stop talking. Well, here comes Alexei Toroshenko, does the same thing. We'll see. But they did, obviously, they added Kasperi Kapanen.
Yep.
So, and then Sammy Blais, they signed him
for another year.
Another year. So
that was one of the things that I did have written up here too. So what are your guys' thought process when it comes around I thought it was a very good deal. 1 mil.
Yeah,
for 1 year.
1 mil.
I love it.
Good. Yeah. That's
great. I mean, he could he needs a prove it deal to show that he can play well given the opportunity now that he's healthy. And then the Blues could definitely use a solid bottom six guy for $1 million next year.
Right.
And because, I mean, not only that, he's a Berube kind of guy. He'll play the game the right way for sure.
Those guys know each other very well. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I like it very much.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Caps one as much yet.
But I think for a mil for a year, that's a pretty good deal, honestly. Because I mean,
even if he has like an average year, he's still probably playing at like the clip of like a 2 mil, 1.5, somewhere around there. So you're coming out ahead, right?
For sure.
And I think it's great for prove it, because then if he's nothing, right, or he's injured, he's having issues, he's a healthy scratch, cool, then you just cut and run. You know, $1 million is a lot of money for us, but it's not that much in the NHL, right?
Yeah.
So
exactly. There's no such thing as a bad 1 year contract. It's like that holds true, I think.
And I think he's, you know, when he's out on the ice, you know, he's a hardworking kind of guy too. So, you know, I think Berube recognizes that.
Game recognizes game.
Yep. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to a little bit of the topic here. We've talked about this so much, and I feel like, you know, since we do a weekly podcast, we kind of almost get in this trap of like, who's going to go next? Like, these are the trade projections. And it kind of, we did the same thing with the Cardinals, right? On the offseason, you know, who are we going to sign, stuff like that, right? So I don't want to get like too far into the weeds of like deals and stuff like that, but just kind of like our thought process here, and I guess our feelings and our gut feelings, since the trade deadline is tomorrow, who stays and who goes? Do you guys have anybody else that you feel that is going to be created? All right. So, Adam, so why do you say Parayko at this point in time?
I mean, I know you didn't want to get into the rumors, but I know he's been rumored you know, some possible trades with the Oilers as well. Or at one point, I don't know if that's cooled off or not, but
I think it has, because they got Matthias Ekholm from.
Oh, did they? Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how serious we'll be able to get, you know, rid of Parayko, you know, but seems like he's not well liked in this city. So I don't know.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't think any more moves are going to happen, because I don't think there's any interest in any of the guys we want to move at this point.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, because
he's got a no trade clause
too.
Much. So, right.
He might be able to have gotten something for Parayko, but I really think that Nashville kind of screwed us out of that deal. Well, so yeah, never mind.
The Parayko deal is not going to happen because Andy Strickland's reporting that as of yesterday afternoon, Blues haven't contacted Parayko or his agents about any trade or anything either. So highly doubt anything's going to happen. So they would have had to be in talks because he has a no trade clause anyway. So
yes. Yeah. And that was some of the speculations that he seems to really want to stay in St. Louis. So yeah. It's possible that the only place he would waive it for is his hometown Edmonton, which probably now is no use for him.
Yep.
At least not till the off season, maybe. So
yeah.
And like I said, Crew doesn't have much value. Maybe they could get something for Letty. It all depends how they see some of these people.
He does not have a no trade clause, just so you know.
Yeah. So I mean, maybe they do that, but I haven't heard any smoke about moving Letty. I don't think there's anything else gonna happen this trade deadline.
Yeah, and I was talking specifically about Parayko. I didn't think he does.
Okay.
No, he does.
I thought he had a free clause. Maybe not.
Okay. No, but Torrey, like a lot of our defense does. Torrey Krug has a full no trade clause. I think Letty has a partial no trade clause. Falk has a no trade clause. I know that. I think that was the reason why they were looking at Parayko potentially as a moving piece. The other thing too about it is really there's been so much movement already before the trade deadline. Deadline is actually going to be pretty quiet. I'm looking at it right now on SpoTrack here. It shows that he is nothing on his status. His no trade clause, his modified no trade clause, hits in 2018.
Huh.
Or 2028, excuse me.
Okay, interesting. I'm just looking here. It says he has 7 years left on his deal and had no trade clause.
Doesn't have a no trade clause.
Apparently not.
SpoTrack has got his entire contract laid out. His no trade clause, and it's only a 15-team no trade clause, hits for the for two seasons in the 28 and 29 season. The 28-29 season, the 29 and 30 season. So at the very, very the last two seasons of his contract.
Gotcha. I was mistaken. Yeah, I thought for some reason I read that he had a no trade clause, but maybe that's what they're referring to is because of the
exactly. Modified. Yeah,
that's probably what it
because
was.
With hockey specifically, that happens a lot with these no trade clauses. So they have to report the no trade clause because it's part of the contract, but then the contract breaks down differently than see sometimes. That makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. For sure. So
he doesn't. So it's at the end of his contract, which is going to be 28. All the way to 30, you said?
Yeah. So it's gotcha. In his year 35 and 36 season. Jesus. That's when he's like no trade clause. So hope to God we get rid of him before then.
Oh, my God.
Unless he comes out and starts playing well again. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, my God. All right.
I think Sammy Blay scores one tonight to celebrate the new contract.
That'd be cool. I would like that for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. Getting back on the last thing for the trade deadline, at least for me, I don't even see, not even just for the Blues, I'm not seeing a lot happen on the trade deadline period because a lot of teams have gotten their stuff figured out before the trade deadline. Yeah. Trade deadline typically is very, very hectic for the NHL. However, in the past 3 to 5 years, it's been a little bit more calm. Like there's always been one blockbuster. You're like, oh wow, that happened. But really, all the rumors have already that you've even hear about, Patrick Kane, Vladimir Tarasenko, Roar, Ivan Barbashev, it's all happened. You know what I mean? Yeah. Even Chychrun's gone now. You know what I mean? Yeah. So Timo Meier. Yeah, exactly. I think stuff will still happen, but I don't think it's going to be nearly as impactful as it has in the past couple of years.
Yeah. Good point. Good point.
For sure.
Well, anyways. Let's move off the Blues here because it's always depressing to talk about them.
Yeah, for sure.
It's gonna be interesting. But let's go on, Adam.
I was gonna say let's talk about something that's hopefully gonna be a little more exciting, and that's the Cardinals, right? So
yeah, so let's talk about the Cardinals. Obviously, spring games have started here. And I'm just gonna blow through these real quick. So I have 10 players here that I kind of want to talk about just to go through their stats and kind of some more standout stats when I'm taking a look at it. Obviously, these are in very small small examples and stuff like that. But Donovan is, it's kind of crazy, but Donovan leads the team right now with two home runs in spring training. However, that being said, he's batting .250, so he's got three hits and two of them are home runs. I thought that was funny. Jordan Walker is batting at a .300 average. He's got one homer, one double, three RBIs. He's also got two strikeouts. Arenado's looked phenomenal. He made some very good plays at third base, but he's also batting .500 on his average, a homer, one RBI, on base percentage of 1.4, slugging at .900. Goldie's looked even better than that at the plate, .556 on average. One home run, one RBI, 1.556 OPS, and 1,000 on his slugging. Now we get into some more interesting ones, right? So Dylan Carlson averaging right now .200 on average and leads the entire is tied with everybody in spring training, not even just for the Cardinals, but MLB, with four strikeouts, slugging at only .300. But that sounds bad. But Contreras, our big acquisition, is even worse. He's 0-7 with four strikeouts this season, or in the spring training. In adverse to that, Herrera, is 2-3 with a walk and one strikeout. O'Neill, obviously, hopefully we can have him to be able to bounce back. It really hasn't looked that way so far. He's got .200 on his average. He did hit one double. He's got one RBI, but three strikeouts as well. And then two pitchers I wanted to point out here. Waino has not looked great. Now, Waino, obviously, is a professional. We know he'll figure it out. He's gotten he's only pitched five innings. He's given up eight hits and four runs for an ERA of 7.2 and a whip of 1.8. Jake Woodford, on the other hand, five innings pitched, he's only given up two hits, one run for an ERA of 1.8 and a whip of 0.60. So those are, like, again, real quick, 10 players I wanted to point out. OJ, which kind of your opinion? Obviously, I know you've been watching the games a little bit more too. Probably than either Adam and I have. What's your takes on? What's your take on spring training so far? Any of these numbers that I'm pointing out here, predicated on anything?
Well, so I mean, it's spring training. You can't draw a whole lot of conclusions. Thing that stuck out to me the most was Nolan Gorman's defense at second base. Like, he actually looks pretty smooth and turned some really athletic double plays. One of them is one where he fielded the ball towards the bag and then he stepped on second and had to jump, turn, throw to first to get the double play. And it looked like natural. And the other one, he had a nice little flip from his glove to the shortstop on second. To me, like, his defense seems to have progressed quite a bit, at least in those flashier plays. Because again, they've only had two games televised. So,
right. Well, that's awesome. considering he was one of the worst defenders of our team last year, that's awesome he's stepping up. So, yeah.
Well,
it sounds like he's made some progress, hopefully.
You also got to remember that he only had ever had like 70 games as a second baseman or something last year. Like, it's a really new position to him, still even. Exactly. But
which in 70 games sounds like a lot, but it's really difficult because it's not like you are getting a lot of movement on it, so that you can go an entire game never had a ball hit to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So especially at second base. So 70 games is definitely not a lot of learning a new position.
For sure.
Yeah. And so now, but that's been that was one of his qualities that they touted about him, apparently, is his work ethic. So, and it kind of bears out. If you look at his minor league numbers, you'll see how each time he hits a new level, he'll struggle at first for a bit, and then he'll
figure it out.
He'll figure something out, make an adjustment, and start crushing it. So, I mean, that's the guy I'm keeping my eye on this year, because the other thing is he seems to have potentially fixed a hole in his swing that made it hard for him to get to the high pitches. Cause he's had a couple of those where he's, hit him hard, like lined him. I mean, he's not like doing real damage with them, but he's at least hitting them, right? He's not swinging through them like he was last year, which is really important.
Yeah. His strikeout rate was just atrocious last year.
Yeah, and a big part of it is because pitchers figured out that if they throw him anything high in the zone, that he has like this had like this uppercut swing, which he wouldn't modify at all. So he would just swing underneath it, even though he's trying to get to it. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, if that's something he fixed this year too, I mean, he might be the second baseman going forward and pushing Brendan Donovan off to more of a utility role, despite his like near 400 on base percentage. So
yeah, I'm not saying this is the thing to me. Like, I like Brendan Donovan a lot because of the way that he's able to draw walks. I think he's very solid. Obviously, he won the Gold Glove as a utility player. And I think he's an underrated hitter. He's not going to be Nolan Gorman, obviously, right? But, you know, so that would be interesting. But that's a good problem for the Cardinals to have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially because Brendan Donovan can play the outfield as well, where Nolan Gorman can't do that. You know what I mean? Well, so yeah. I think that would be, again, a very good problem to have. And it would give, Marmol here a lot of flexibility when it comes to being able to rotate in and put players in.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it looks like Donovan, you know, like you were mentioning, I just was looking here. It looked like he actually, with the game against the Mets earlier this week, it looks like he produced a power surge and included 2 home runs and 5 total extra base hits and a 12-7 win over the Mets. So that's great to see. So not only is he stepping up defensively, but also awesome offensively as well. So,
yeah. I wanted to also, you know, bring your attention to the fact that though he won a Gold Glove for a utility player last year, I don't think if I'm remembering correctly, I don't think any of the numbers bore out that he was really better than like average defensively at any given position. So his value defensively really comes from the fact that he can play a bunch of different positions, like you were saying, Josh. So if Nolan Gorman can actually become like a decent second baseman and he's hitting the ball well, then you can still probably get Brendan Donovan like 500 something at bats, just rotating around different positions, giving people days off and stuff. So
absolutely. Now the thing, what I saw, and again, it really depends on how you look at the sabermetrics and everything too, because numbers can tell you one thing and then tell you the other too, on the other side of the coin, you know what I mean? But what I saw, was that outfield, he was average, but on second, shortstop, he was below average, which I thought was kind of crazy. But second base, he was above average is what I saw. So that's why, like, for me coming into this season, I had him as our second baseman. Right. But again, if Nolan Gorman can play defensively, or maybe just platoon him too, you know, the two as well, who cares, you know, ride the hot bat. Right. And that also, I think, will drive competition between the two, to, you know, say, you know, Marmol's just going to go, hey, whoever's got the hot bat, I'm going to play him. You know what I mean? If their defense is adequate to each other, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. We'll need to see a little more of both of them to really get a feel for how this will shake out. But it's like you said, it's a really good problem to have.
So what's your thoughts on Jordan Walker and Contreras at this point? Contreras, I mean, defensively, he's looked okay. You know what I mean? He's obviously it's spring training. And I've read a report that he's trying to get closer to Adam Wainwright. But like Waino, apparently this was just like stuff that was said online from kind of the rumor mill, but just like the gossip thing, that Waino pranked him, was like, I'm not talking to you because you're not Yadi, kind of thing. And to the point, Contreras apparently called Yadier and was like, how the hell do I get through to this guy? And he goes, he's probably messing with you. And so he approached Waino. He's like, dude, I'm totally messing with you. Like, and that's Waino too, because Waino loved pranks. And I could totally see him doing that, because everybody in the league knows that he was best friends with Yadier.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Everybody in the world knows. So I think that would be absolutely hilarious. You know what I mean?
That's funny
happened.
As hell, though.
Who knows what would happen? But apparently there was one thing that they said on one of those non-televised games, was they were both on the dugout. Contreras walked over and started talking to Wainwright. And Wainwright apparently like sighed really loud, like put his head up and like rolled his eyes and walked away. And Contreras was like, what the hell is that? And like people were like snickering and laughing behind, because they apparently knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, that's pretty funny. You know what I mean? Especially because you can do that now. You know what I mean? It's spring training and you're building camaraderie.
For sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
that's
so funny. I mean, my opinion on him, like, the way I look at it, because Adam Wainwright obviously has some velocity issues. Like, I don't think his fastball's gotten up over 86, but for like the grizzled vets like him and Contreras, like, I'm not really having too much putting too much into spring training, especially really early spring training. Like, I guarantee you they're taking it really easy right now because they know it's a lot of season.
They're trying something else. They're trying something else out. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, they're ramping up. Like, they're not like these young guys that are like, I got to show up to camp and fight for a spot.
You know, I was going to say, like, this is last season. So, you know,
yeah,
you could take kind of take it a little more easy, I think, for sure.
Exactly. So I don't really read too much into it. I do. I mean, Jordan Walker's performance obviously is interesting because it's Jordan Walker, and also because the Cardinals put a bunch of crap out in the media about how, you know, he's essentially fighting for a job this spring. So if that's really true, then, you know, he could be on your starting opening day roster.
For sure.
And he certainly is playing like that's what he's trying to do. So, I mean, good luck to him. I mean, but all the outfielders have kind of been doing fine right now. So if everyone does well, I think he winds up starting in AAA.
I agree with you 100% because, like, you know, even though the numbers haven't really said it, you know, O'Neill, if you look at it, and Carlson too, they both have kind of struggled. They both have played well defensively, though. And again, that, you know, in such a small little, you know, sample size here, it's kind of hard to tell whether he's going to be good, like that they're going to not be there. And also too, it's like what I said, like when you're in a boxing or UFC, you are going in there trying to dethrone the person that's already in that position. So you have to dominate, you know what I mean? Right. You have to just be that much better. If everything is apples to apples, well then, okay, cool. Jordan, we know that you could potentially get there, but they've been doing this for a minute now. You know what I mean? So we need to give them the opportunity to go out there. Plus, they're getting paid a lot more and get you down back so where you can get some more practice at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because, I mean, I guarantee you he could still benefit from taking some games in the outfield in the minors. Like, he's not going to be – he's done fine. He's done well enough at the in the outfield position this spring, but he could always learn. He could probably still stand to get some more experience in there. So
sure. I think that there's some definitely positive things coming out of the spring training games. It's going to be interesting, and maybe we can talk about that next week about, like, are they starting to ramp up a little bit more? And, like, are we still seeing the same trend, or is it still the same small market size here, or small sample size? Excuse me.
What you'll see here too is soon as the World Baseball Classic gets closer, we're going to start seeing more and more of the young guys in the spring, which is going to make it even more interesting to talk about, because we'll be able to see – we're already seeing a lot of Mason Wynn. I see him in, like, every game. Like, he's at least getting significant time in, it seems like, so.
Yeah, and I think that can definitely tell us a lot, too. And it shows – because it's not just spring training, you know what I mean, where you can kind of, like – especially if you're a veteran, where you just walk through it, sleepwalk through it, whatever. This is – real, you know what I mean? This is for something, and it might not be, you know, the World Series, it might not be for a full-on starting job, but there's a lot of pride on the line, kind of what we just talked about with the Blues specifically. You have a lot of pride, you want to go out there and win, and especially because you're representing your country, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's gonna be interesting. I'm excited for sure about spring training, what that could potentially bring for us. You know, again, I coming in out of free agency, I wasn't like super high on the Cardinals because it was just Wilson Contreras. Essentially, I felt that we might need another addition. Obviously, now we know about the Diamond Sports deal and stuff like that. So that could be why Mo didn't go out and get anything else or anything like that as well. But that being said, like, the more I'm starting to see the younger players step up as well, you're starting to look, okay, this is a good problem to have. This is a good problem to have, you know? So it's going to be interesting to see how it is when it progresses more towards the beginning of the season, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to another St. Louis here that is on the rise. A little caw-caw, right? I know everybody here, we actually had it on the podcast. Not that we hosted it. That sounded like that we were hosting it, but we were talking about the game last time on the podcast. The Battle Hawks now 2-0 after another come from behind win against Seattle. I think it was a really fun game to watch, and man, I'm very excited for that home opener. I'm just excited to watch them play. Period. Absolutely. You know, what was your guys' take?
I think all St. Louis is.
Yeah, like that's I mean, you know, Adam, we were talking a little bit before the podcast. What were you saying? Like the expected attendance is going to be for the home opener? Like,
they're estimating about 32,000 are going to be at the home opener, which the home opener back in 2020 was 29,000. So they've opened up. So obviously we pretty much have sold out the lower bowl. In fact, I was just looking through some of the seats in the lower bowl, and we have maybe just roughly about 25, 30 seats season ticket wise that we have left over. By the way, these are season tickets. I'm not talking individual game tickets. I'm talking full on all five games are going to be pretty much sold out from what I can tell. And then they also have opened up sections 338 all the way to 344 so far, and it looks like they're going to have to open up some more, because I was just looking and almost all those sections are sold out except for 338 and 344. Those two sections have a few seats left, but pretty much everything in the middle is almost all sold out. So you're looking at maybe a couple hundred season tickets that are left available right now. And if we win again against DC this weekend, I expect those tickets to be completely wiped out. And I expect that they'll continue to just keep opening up more and more sections on that third level.
I think this is very interesting, too. So back in January, this was apparently the very beginning of January. This got posted up on Reddit from a person that was working with the XFL on like ticket sales. He said that the Battlehawks had sold roughly 15,700 season tickets back in January. He's like, put this in perspective, Orlando Guardians have sold less than 1,000. I'm like, oh my God, that is crazy. And this was 3 months ago. You had 15,700. We were part of that, obviously.
Yeah,
15,700. It, 3 months ago, like, before you even knew what the product was.
And the individual ticket market, which is all right now, is all completely resale. I will say, I mean, as not surprised, but the Blues tickets are significantly cheaper now. It's a lot cheaper to go to a Blues game than it is an XFL game now on any of those games that are available. So I'm not surprised. Sorry, I had to point that out.
If the players aren't going to put in a decent effort, then why should we pay to see?
Let's go watch some football then. So
exactly, those guys are fighting for their lives. They give a shit.
They're coming from behind and winning. And so,
Austin Prohl is just making sure that the Prohls are just a St. Louis legend.
They're going to be. He's getting ready to put his. You know, he's going to say he's wanting his statue outside of the dome. So
if Ricky ran for
he's ready.
If Ricky ran for mayor, I'd vote for him.
Absolutely, man.
I was gonna say, can we do that? That'd be great.
By the way, OJ, I was so pissed because like during the broadcast of Seattle, they kept talking about how Ricky Prohl was a legend in Seattle, and I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
When did he play for Seattle?
This is a joke. But it's like he was notoriously here. You know, talking about the Rams days.
That's what they should be doing. They should be fucking highlighting how shitty the NFL is.
It's good to see you like that.
This guy used to be a legend for the St. Louis Rams before they had their team ripped away from them by the greedy assholes at the NFL.
There you go.
Of course, all those announcers are probably angling for NFL jobs, so we better make sure we pretend that St. Louis doesn't exist.
Right.
You gotta be shitting me. Okay, so I'm looking at Ricky Prohl's like career, right? So he played for the Arizona Cardinals for 4 years, and then he joined Seattle. He was in Seattle for 2 years. He was with us for 4 years, and then obviously went to Carolina for 2 years, and then obviously because he had a lot of injuries with Carolina specifically.
Let me get this straight. He's here for 4 years, but he gets remembered for being Seattle for two seasons.
Well,
let's face it, he was in a freaking Super Bowl with us.
Yeah, here. And so I'm looking
fucking serious. Okay.
He wasn't just in a Super Bowl. He got us to the Super Bowl.
You're right. That's what I'm saying. You're right.
It's like, so, yeah, okay. No, I don't get it, dude.
So look at this, though, right? So in the 2 years, he played in a total of 24 games and had 28 catches for Seattle. He only started seven of those games. He had a total of 338 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns in the 2 years he was at Seattle. But he's a legend there. Sorry. That's right. So, like, literally the first year he was in St. Louis, he had better numbers. He had 60 catches, 71 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Oh, my God. That was before we even went to this freaking Super Bowl.
Wow.
That is hilarious.
Anyway.
Wow. Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm definitely excited to see, if we can, keep our offense going. Obviously, it's been a bit of a rocky start, but I also wanted to make a point that, we're making some changes logistically as well, in the coaching, and the coaching staff. There were some announcements, I think it was earlier today, that came out that, our linebackers coach, was apparently, I guess he resigned, I think is what I've read.
So Dave
is there Steppel, any word as to why?
No word, I don't believe.
He wanted to spend more time with his family is what they said, that this was a lot more of a time commitment than he was bargaining for.
Is that what they said?
And so they hired Chris Claiborne as well.
Gotcha. Interesting.
So he'll be starting with us this weekend. So anyway.
I mean, yeah, our defense has been strong, so.
Well, it's interesting. You say that, and actually have some statistics to talk about. So I'll start with the defense, and then I'll kind of work backwards. But so right now, our defense leads the XFL with tackles and 103 tackles. So the funny thing about that is when you look at the statistic for defense and you say for tackles, it's a good thing and a bad thing, right? That means obviously that the offense is still moving the ball. They're getting first downs because you wouldn't have those tackles. But at the same time, they're at least tackling people. So
it also,
like, regardless,
means that your offense can't sustain drives.
Exactly. Right. I completely understand. So that's why, like,
that component of it too.
Exactly.
And our offense has been pretty fucking rough at times. So.
Yeah. It's so hard to evaluate tackles specifically. However, that being said, we are last in the XFL with sacks. We only got 2. Last in the XFL with tackles for loss. We only have 8. That being said, we're tied for first. With 4 fumbles and 4, also we're tied for first in recoveries for fumbles because we're 4-4.
That
what
is
about points allowed? Where do we rank in that?
So points allowed was not a. I tried to look that up, and I could probably, like, if I did some math or whatever, that I could easily, find that out. But I'm not terribly too certain because that was not like a statistic that was available when I was looking it up.
They don't have points allowed by defense, like not including special teams.
OJ, none of this is on ESPN. This is all from like fan websites because like even the XFL app, like the XFL app is crap, man. So like you can't get like leaders, you can barely get anything. It was really crappily like ran. Like last time when the rendition of 2020, it was a lot of fun. You did pick-ems, you did all this stuff. You had the stats that were right there. Like it was very well ran. This time it's really crap and it crashes all the time too. But whatever, I'm not gonna get into that. It's interesting. I did want to talk about some offense too, because I did want to bring up like McCarron, Brian Hill, and Parole. So those are kind of like to me the leaders, obviously. I mean, McCarron is second in completed percentage in the XFL with 64.5, which isn't great, but it's also not bad.
How is he second? Like, we have receivers dropping so many balls. Like,
that's the problem.
I was gonna say, or he's overthrowing them too. So.
Or he does that as well. Yes.
Yeah. So I do have an adjusted here. So an adjusted completed percentage, essentially ruling out drops, he's at 78%, which is a lot more respectable, right? But believe it or not, with that, he's still at second. With the adjusted, he's third in yards with 374. Third in touchdowns with 3. However, he is first with the touchdown to interception ratio. He's got 0% on his INTs. He's got 0 INTs, obviously. He's played pretty smart, at least with the ball, and at least putting the ball where the other guys can't get it, including his own receivers. Yeah. Sometimes, yeah.
That's been really important. I mean, we wouldn't have won both of these last two games if he had, even with just one interception thrown, it might have swung the game the other way.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm telling you guys right now, we definitely need Brian Hill back. So Brian Hill only played one game, right? He's still 11th right now in rushing yards with 55. By the way, AJ McCarron's got 53, just saying.
Wow.
But Hill, this is crazy. He's still first on average per rush in the XFL with 9.13. Like, we really need Brian Hill back because he is the most explosive back that we have. And, like, we don't have, like, the Duran and stuff like that. They're not bad, but, like, we need Hill back. And it does sound like he will be either back this week or next week.
Sweet.
Ricky Pearl, he's tied for sixth in the league with 8 receptions.
Austin Pearl.
Yeah, his son.
I'm so used to saying Ricky Pearl, but yeah, my bad. Thank you, OJ. So good Austin Pearl, tied for sixth in the league with 8 receptions. He is 9th with reception yards at 86. And he's tied for 4th with 1 TD. but you know, hey, you got to start somewhere, right?
It honestly sounds like all the offenses have just been really bad.
Yeah, and they truly have, because it's what we talked about before too. The offensive line and running game has been atrocious because they only have 3 weeks of practice together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're getting complicated schemes and stuff like that. As a guy that played defense in high school for the most part, it's much easier because we're gonna run cover 2, cover 3, whatever. As I'm just talking about as a secondary, these are your blitzing. These are the gaps that you hit. Cool. You know what I mean? If you can dictate at that point in time, it's really easy to just sit there in zone. Or if you're playing man, cool, I line up from this guy. Rather than have to remember, he's running a 3 route, he's running a 6 route, you know, whatever. Or, this is our blocking scheme and stuff. But, it is what it is.
Hard to block, too.
Technically speaking, it looks like McCarron has – I think he's – tied for second when it comes to actually, you know, as far as passing touchdowns here, he has a total of 3. I think Jack Cohn has 4. So there you go.
He's
tied for third.
Is he tied for third? Gotcha. Yeah. Somebody else has 4? I didn't realize that. Okay.
No, I just realized something. I mean, people always complain about O-line play in the NFL. It's always like, because they never have a chance to develop. Because they just go straight from college where they dominate people with their athleticism and size, and then they go immediately to the NFL. Well, I'm starting to think that maybe the XFL could be the place where you start seeing a lot of offensive linemen transferred to the NFL because they actually have time to develop that skill at a lower stage.
And you have game experience too. That's not college because. I will tell you a very quick story too. When my dad used to sell arcade games and stuff like that, Orlando Pace was a guy that came in one time. We all know who Orlando Pace is. I mean, dude's a Hall of Famer, right? Now, Orlando was talking to my dad about it because my dad was, talking to him about, coming into the NFL and what the transition was like. And he goes, let me tell you, John, it's my dad's name. He's like, I was the man. In high school, I was the man in college. I was the man everywhere that I went. I was just the dude. I played college. He played for Ohio State, too. And so he's like, I was playing Big Ten football. I was dominating people, tossing them left and right. He got picked up, obviously, first pick in the 97 draft, if I remember correctly. And then he came here and was a huge learning curve. He's like, during training camps, I was getting tossed around. I was getting ran over. And people are like, yeah, you're the big boy on campus now, huh? And that's coming from a Hall of Famer. You know, he said that it was just a completely different animal coming into the NFL and took him a while for him to get his feet wet, so to speak, where he could be able to be as good as he was.
Yeah.
So I thought that was to your point, OJ, that the jump from college to NFL level, instead of just playing these guys that are been doing it for a max of 4 years, you're now going up against a guy that has been doing it for 15 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
And doing it at high levels.
Exactly, exactly. And you got a really complicated offensive scheme. You got to worry about, like, who you're going to block. You know, there's all these different things that defense does to try and disguise who's going and who's not and all that kind of stuff.
Like, it's, stuff like that. So, line, yeah, exactly. Right, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of mental side to that game. So it's really important to learn that. Same thing with quarterbacks, too, really. I mean, how many guys could probably be excellent NFL quarterbacks if they were just given the opportunity to really study the game at a higher level before being thrown to the dogs, you know?
PJ Walker, for example. PJ Walker, obviously, he got to play a little bit actually in the NFL. He's not a starter, but he had the talent, showed it, but he also had the ability to learn a playbook and be able to, and rather than just, okay, he's too small to play, and yeah, he's a good runner, but he's not a Lamar Jackson. You know what I mean? That's literally how they treated him in the Columbine. Or Columbine, wow, the Combine. And it was, but that's how, unfortunately, it's like the first impression is so important for these players that go into the combine. And if you don't get that, you don't get drafted most of the time. You know what I mean?
Right. And if you get drafted by some crap team and you just thrown to the wolves behind a paper thin offensive line, and you still are like used to college concepts and you don't know anything about pro concepts and stuff, like, it would take a quite extraordinary person to succeed under those circumstances.
Look at Drew Brees. Look at Drew Brees. You know, he plays for San Diego, is terrible. He goes to New Orleans, and all of a sudden he's able to unlock it because Peyton took the time with him to be able to help him develop, and he's a Hall of Famer.
Right. Because that's probably the most important part of that position is, like, your IQ, the mental side of the game. So, it doesn't make sense that there's no way for guys to develop other than getting their, like, 3 or 4 years in college.
Yeah, you are not long, especially because a lot of kids now are leaving after that third year. You know what I mean? They're just going straight up because they know their stock's high and they can make more money. So why wouldn't they?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Rather than working on their craft. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you're like an ACL tear away from not getting drafted at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's always, you know, the rewards always outweigh the risk when it comes to, you know, going to the draft instead of playing for your fourth year.
Right.
All right. Well, last thing I want to talk about, there's actually two of them, but they're kind of more on special teams. So kicking, man, Hagman, obviously he got us our game winner in week two. So good for him. That being said, the dude is 3 for 6 with 50%. We have also, by the way, that's not great because we have the most kicking attempts in the XFL this year.
Josh, he was short on a 50-yarder.
I know, dude. That was so bad. That was so bad.
That tells me you need to get somebody else in there.
That's got it. Yeah. And the thing about it, and they're like, oh, well, there was a lot of wind, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, I understand that. But you have these guys in the NFL that are kicking – people on the practice squad are kicking 60-yarders. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
We demand that we get Rizzolino back, to say it.
Yeah. No shit.
I was going to say he went and, you know, kicked a 58-yarder like it was nothing so while we were there. So
yeah. The other thing, too, is we need to figure out a return game. So, like, we are fourth in the league right now with our kick return average of 20.4 yards. I know there's obviously a lot of rules that go into this and all this stuff, too. But we have a kick return on average of 20.4 yards. That's including whatever they catch it on the one, obviously running it to the 20-yard line. That's, you know, 19 yards. We are dead last in punt return with 4 yards. That's our average.
Oof.
Like, this league is designed for us to be able to return the ball, or not us, but just players in general, teams to be able to return the ball. So we got to be able to figure something out there, because I think that also will help our offense. You know what I mean? Puts more pressure on the defense.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, fun statistic for you for Austin Prohl. He is tied for second and first down receptions in the league. I thought that was pretty cool, too.
I mean, he is a prototypical possession receiver.
He really is. Yeah, he's 8 for 10 on receptions, and both of the missed receptions were overthrows by McCarron.
Of course they were.
Yeah,
I mean, he makes catches even when he's getting mauled by defensive backs. Like, he might have an NFL career ahead of him.
We'll see, man. Yeah, but for right now, let's stick with the caw-caw. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I need him here.
How old is he anyway?
That's good question.
Is he even young enough for somebody in the NFL to give him a shot?
What is he, 27? 27, it says?
He's 27. I mean, I think so. I mean, like, you're not 30. Once you get to, like, the 30, that's when NFL teams really, really are hard on running backs and receivers just because of, like, the durability aspect of things.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're fine with it for linemen. They're fine with it for, because there's just so much movement in your knees and your ankles and stuff like that. You're fine with it as a 30-year-old quarterback and stuff like that. Even as a DB, you're kind of fine with it. There's just so much quick movements that anything could happen, and all of a sudden now you don't have that pop anymore because you just can't recover.
Yeah. So I mean, it looks like he's been trying out and, you know, been signed, you know, picked up by the Chargers, spots, yeah, the Bills, and the Giants, and the 49ers, and the Rams, and the Titans. Wow. So he actually goes back quite a ways, but unfortunately he just can't, you know, break through
to bracket, yeah.
Yeah, through practice as well. So yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But maybe this is what he needs, who knows?
Well, at least he's getting, you know, he's still getting to, you know, still get to play football. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So, and with his dad. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
For sure. Well, I'm excited for week 3. Hopefully we get another win under our belt.
DC.
And go to 3-0. Yeah. And it's going to be interesting to see how Tamu does against his old team.
Yeah.
And, hopefully we can get some sacks and, you know, just walk away with a win.
I need to figure out when the trade deadline is for this sport, because we're getting
Tamu. We're going to get Rosalino back, right? We're going to get put together our team.
I don't think there's any trades. Yeah,
McCarron's done fine so far, but, like, I mean, come on. You know you want Jordan Tamu back.
Yeah.
I also have to have some kind of hope that we can get a better kicker this season.
Yeah, I don't think there are trades allowed in the XFL, especially this year and next year and stuff like
that. Well, they do trades, but I don't think maybe not during the season, because I know that we were doing trades prior to the season or whatever.
Right, because that was also just filling out, like, the draft system, like the draft and stuff like that, to be a little bit more balanced. Because, like, you know, sometimes you're like, well, dude, we have this dearth of, you know, needs here, so let's go out and see who's out there that could be a trading partner and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know, and I think it'd be better for a lot of these younger guys that are coming from college. They don't have that pro experience, so they're not constantly flipping in and out. I think that once the season starts, they lock. You know what I mean? I think
just completed 2 weeks in. So it's like, okay, they're still kicking the rust off a little bit. And, you know, like you said, they didn't even really get, you know, to really even do, I was going to say, much of a practice and, you know, sort of any kind of preseason together per se at all. You know, it was all just going straight into the league. So, you know,
I'm just really worried about the kicker.
Like, yeah,
really,
I would love to have Rosalino back, but
I don't know
that he's with the Renegades. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to cost us at least one game this season. You're going to see it, and it's going to be maddening.
Yep.
It already almost happened.
It was very close.
We wouldn't have even needed a last minute field goal if he just hit one of the other two.
Yeah, he did it on purpose so he could be a hero, you know?
Yeah. Showing
That's
off.
That's how that works, yeah.
Doing a little Jimmy.
Yeah, you're missing.
They want that excitement at the very end. Yeah,
got a hot dog a little bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, he he missed the 50-yard, but I think he also missed like a 42-yard field goal. You know what I mean? It's like, come on, man. I might be able to hit that.
He wasn't short though. It was just offline.
Wide left, I think, or something. But whatever.
Being short on a 50-yard, that's pretty tough.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's go ahead and, I guess, transition here to the next newest team of the of St. Louis and talk about our soccer club here. They are now 1-0.
Woo!
Let's go, right? Yeah. So,
let's go. I was going to say beating down Austin. There you go. That was an awesome game.
Made it to the Western Conference Finals or whatever last year.
Yes. So Austin right now is expected to finish in the top four, if not. A lot of MLS projections have them at least finishing third in the West this season, before the playoffs, obviously. And so for us to be able to do that on their home turf,
played pretty well.
I thought it was. That's the thing about it. We played a lot sharper than what I think people were expecting us to play. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Tim Parker coming into a week. Score. Yeah, the 24 minutes. Exactly. That was epic.
I think a lot of that's because we had that delayed start because of COVID, but they still got like a good portion of the team together and play in the MLS Next. Played like some of this team played together in the lower league, and I think they like pretty much dominated it too. But anyway, a lot of the team has had experience playing together, like a full season's worth. So.
Yeah, and right. while Austin, you know, they dominated more in the possession of the game per se, but we were obviously just taking more shots, you know.
Oh yeah, we outshot them considerably. Like 9-2 shots.
Yeah, 9-2 shots on target. Exactly.
We had a lot of. I noticed that a lot of our offense flowed through like the corner kicks.
Yep.
Like we weren't doing as much of the, you know, creative playmaking in the open field. I guess they were defending us too well for that. But we did manage to work corner kicks in, and that was nice. Got us a little momentum.
And that's how you expose teams sometimes, right? So, Adam, you just alluded to it. So, Austin had 59.7% of possession to our 40.3. And you take a look at it, we had 18 shots, 9 of them were on net. They had 13 with two on net. Sometimes in hockey, you want shots, obviously, because, you know, any shot you don't take, it goes in. Soccer, it's a little bit more, you don't necessarily need to just shoot the ball a lot. Now, here's the thing. At least they were on net, right? We had 9. So half of our shots were on net. That's very impressive. Mm-hmm. They had 13 and got 2 on net, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. But that being said, to our defensive stuff, we had 5 block shots. They had 3, but we blocked 5 of their shots. That's pretty impressive as well for young defense to do. Well, we need to work on our passing. Go ahead,
OJ. Oh, I was going to say another impressive thing is that especially for like a new team, even if we hung with Austin at first, you would expect them to at least have an advantage as far as when it comes to substitutions.
But exactly right.
Because that's actually when we put the game away.
We did.
I mean, the guy that did it isn't a sub, but so
regardless,
I mean,
you put the sub be able to generate offense because you're putting fresh legs on.
Well, yeah, because I watched that and it didn't feel like they dominated. Like the ball was in Austin's end a lot late in the game. So at least by my eye.
No, for sure. It felt like you were generating, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you take a look at it. We do need to work on our passing. So our passing accuracy was 74%, 74.3. Want to get technical. Theirs was 85. And that's typically right around for MLS team. That's what you're going to look at, like mid 80s to high 80s and stuff like that. They had 507 passes to 347. Both were even in corners at 8 apiece. Now, this is where it got really interesting to me. They had 22 crosses to our 8. So what that means for anybody that does not understand. So on the wings, on the very far side, you cross it into the box. They were trying to expose us wide to bring it in, but we were able to play very well defensively inside, except, I mean, the second goal was kind of ridiculous, to be quite honest.
It really was. Like, they gave us that goal.
That was hilarious. Yeah. I wonder what's going on with that dude.
And that dude is actually from St. Louis. So I'm like, maybe he secretly wanted us to win.
He's just like, flooded.
That was the guy with that was the sub, right? The guy they had to bring in also because some other guys got hurt early in the game.
I think so.
Yeah, because I remember I was kind of annoyed because he didn't have his uniform on. He wasn't ready to go in. We had to sit there and wait for him to get ready. Like, come on, dude. You're here to play a game, aren't you? But yeah, so
But thanks for the goal, though. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that was.
He passed it to him right in front of the damn net. I'm like, what the hell was that? That's awesome.
Some statistics that make me feel better about our defense too was the fact that we won. So they have duels won, 70 in favor of best of 62. What that means is it's a one-on-one match, right? So it's not allowing the person to be able to dribble through you, to be able to get around you or anything like that. One, if they pass it off into a non-dangerous area or a non-dangerous chance, it's considered a one on that duel as well. We, you know, won the duel 70 to 62, so to speak. We had tackles won 17 to 8, and we also had 22 clearances to 16. We did commit a little bit more on fouling side, 9 to 7, and we did get yellowed. That was the only card that was given out the entire game. Yeah, we got like one yellow. Right. But it tells me that we're aggressive, but we're also winning. You know what I mean? So I'm playing with a lot of pride, too. So I'm very excited about what the St. Louis Soccer Club can bring. You know, not even just to St. Louis, but to MLS.
Yeah, and I'm still very cautious about the whole thing. Cause
I'm with you.
I know I've heard the coach on the radio, and they were asking about the style they're going to play in that. And he's saying, like, oh, we want to do the whole controlled chaos thing and all that. And I mean, in the other sports that I know more about, you usually do that when you feel like you're probably going to have inferior talent. And so you just want to muck things up to try and give yourself a better chance. So, you know, it could still be a very rough season, but it's definitely starting off really nice.
And that being said, too, a lot of what we have on our team is very inexperienced compared to a lot of the players that we're playing against. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At this level, at least. So, you know, that's why I might even invite him to be, you know, kind of a special guest on our podcast. But Adam, you know, Danny, who played soccer internationally, you know, so he's very familiar with this stuff. He told me flat out coming into it that, you know, hey, we're not going to be good. So don't expect them to be good. The MLS is all about trying to drive competition, but that's probably not how it's going to be. We're probably not going to be good for at least 5 years. Again, we were projected to finish dead last, and every analyst except for one who had us finishing second above last.
I was going to say, we're familiar right. with that, you know, sort of hate. So, you know, we can turn shit around. So there you go.
Right. Exactly.
I was going to say,
what's this gross city from the middle of the country?
Exactly.
Right.
Remember all the hate during the Super Bowl that no one said that the Chiefs had a shot. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's project.
Well, or for the fact that they're just like, oh, yeah, like St. Louis, why would they deserve to have an MLS team? Oh, exactly. I don't know. I mean, it's not like we didn't have four fucking players from the National League or the national team representing United States of America in the World Cup from St. Louis, just saying.
Right. And literally every time they
five.
On the active roster, on our reserve, it was five total. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then literally every time that we have, you know, a special event, like, say, for example, Bush Stadium or wherever, you know, every single time those things were just completely just sold out. You know, people were clamoring for MLS. You know, they wanted soccer. It's St. Louis is a big time soccer town, you know. So. Right.
Which, I didn't know that, but I guess it makes sense.
It really is. Yeah.
I mean,
so they've quenched the thirst. We have football. We have soccer. We're feeling good.
Hell yeah. Lots of fun things to pay attention to.
Yeah, we have all kinds of sports now, so there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, all we need is a basketball team, right? Oh, wait, hold on. I don't want a basketball team. Much rather watch SLU Mizzou.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Where they still play a team game in basketball in college.
It's actually interesting, too.
You can skip the NBA bullshit. Yeah, right. I don't care about that.
So there has been rumors, and it doesn't sound like it's like in the very early stages of it. There has been rumors that the NBA will expand from 30 to 32 teams relatively, you know, in the next like 5 to 6 years. But St. Louis is on the short list for that. All my right. thing about it, there's Hell two yeah. things. One, like, hey, that'd be cool because it's generating more revenue for us, more sports that we could watch and stuff like that. You might care about the NBA at that point. But two, where the hell are you going to put them? You know what I mean? Like, for every NBA team, they pretty much want a new stadium. Well, you're not going to put them at the Dome. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know where they're going to put it. They'll have to build it further out. Yeah.
You could utilize some of those plans you had for the football stadium.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That was a nice concept. You could do something like that, put it down on the river there. Like, that would make for a nice little time.
That's actually what it was supposed to be, the combination to open it up for MLS too, because like they had the outdoor stadium essentially there for MLS, although it was a lot smaller. I'm glad we got what we got now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Dude, although I would much rather have kept the sick now. Too. So,
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's pretty nice down there. And obviously, I was going to say where they have St. Louis City SC, you know, the city park is actually pretty nice to how they revitalize all that down by Union Station. So and there's actually some more businesses and stuff that have opened up because of that. And it's really bringing in and, you know, kind of revitalizing that area, which is kind of cool because there wasn't really a whole lot there. It was kind of a dead spot, you know, down past Union Station. So it's kind of nice to
liven it up. If the NBA wanted to come here, you know where honestly they could go is Enterprise, truthfully, because the Enterprise, I've volunteered to help with some of that setup for the NCAA tournaments and stuff like that. I mean, they're very good about setting that stuff up. Like literally you have a hockey game, boom, you know, you have March Madness the next day, so to speak. Like they're very good about turning that stuff around, covering up the ice and putting down the and putting down the hardwood. Because I think they even have some standby hardwood just in case for like any tournaments or stuff like that. I could be wrong.
Well, they've hosted. I was going to say, I know they've hosted before. So, you know.
Yeah. Several times. We've, so, not even just the Final Four. We've hosted the Final Four twice in my lifetime.
Exactly.
But did NCAA tournament games like 10 times, something like that.
Yeah.
Games? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
it's a very good point. I still had the ticket stub when I saw the Florida Gators. Back when it was God, what was his name? Noah something. He was like their he was a power forward, but he played center as well. Hold on 1 second, I can tell you. But they won. That's when they won back to back. Hold on 1 second. Noah basketball. They won back to back tournaments. Joakim Noah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and so he was part of that team. I saw them live. That was the year that the second year when they won the NCAA tournament. I saw them round one and round two, which I thought was kind of crazy because it was all hosted in St. Louis. So that was pretty neat.
Yeah, they definitely could do that. I mean, even Kroenke was, you know, cheap enough to just use the Ball Arena for you know, for the Nuggets and the Avs. So you know, they have to share spaces. Yeah.
So, and actually, at this point, it'd probably be good for, you know, the Blues because you're still having people come into Enterprise. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because, like,
yeah, you're still making revenue.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Well, go pitch that, Josh, and see if they'll do it.
I'll get it done.
I mean, do you think they would? It depends whether the NBA wants a team coming in that's not going to have, like, a new stadium and all that shit.
Exactly. Because, like, if they go up to, say, Seattle – you know what I mean? Who be like, hey, we'll build a new stadium. Well, you're not going to compete with that. You know what I mean? Because I don't think we even have the room to build a new stadium right here.
Yeah. And I honestly could see it being a little bit of a challenge as much as I think people would come to support it. A lot of the people that watch the NBA the most right now already have teams that they're pretty passionate about, I guess.
Because they don't have here. Yeah,
they're not gonna watching a St. Louis team if it sucks, you know?
Right. I'm a big time Warrior fan, man. Like I love Steph Curry. I love how they play that game and stuff like that. But you know, I really enjoy watching the Warriors. I mean, I would still, don't get me wrong, I'm not like die hard into the NBA stuff. Like my cousin is pretty like hardcore into the NBA and a big Warriors fan as well. But I think he would love to have a St. Louis team here too. So I don't know. It's just, as you said, OJ, that's a very good point. Would people be able to deviate off that, you know, just to watch some basketball? But also that being said too, OJ, so you're in a market where you've had basketball here before. You've had some successful basketball here before, but you also now have a lot of basketball fans that are in this area at least according to the research that the NBA has done. They all had different teams. Okay. The way that you get those people to come in to support the St. Louis team is they're going to be facing against those other teams that you're rooting for. And you get to still see that product and be like, oh, you know what? This is actually a pretty cool atmosphere. This isn't that bad to have. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's kind of the help with like soccer as well. You know, with, you know, obviously we're not have the greatest team, but we're going to possibly, you know, bring in some good, you know, show off some talent.
And stuff, you know, exactly. What I mean? So, yep. And like Seattle Sounders, you're going to be able to see those teams. And I think that's the same thing. You're going to have the Warriors here. You're going to have the Bulls here. Yep. And actually, I would – so if this happened in the next, like, 3 to 5 years, it'd be really nice to have – like, so say St. Louis comes back, right, in for basketball. They could immediately start a rivalry with Chicago again because the Bulls aren't that great anymore. You know what I mean? And they're kind of like hit and miss. But that would be kind of cool to see, too, because now you have the St. Louis-Chicago rivalry going again, and it's at another level, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And yeah. I think you have to do it similar to how hockey's been doing it, where you need to have like a fairly generous expansion draft. Yeah, give the fans something to look forward to, even if it's just like, oh, we got all these amazing prospects and picks and shit. Like, we'll be good in a couple years. You know what I mean? Like, even if it's just that
is your franchise player. Exactly right. Yeah,
exactly. Give them something to get behind and they will show up for it. But you can't do, I don't think it would work if they did like the NHL, how the Blues came into the league. you get that kind of quality of basketball, people probably won't show up for it.
Sure. Yeah. All right, gents. Well, as always, it's always fun talking to you guys here about some St. Louis sports, and maybe we'll get some basketball eventually. But for right now, we got a lot to look forward to on the baseball side. For some football and call, right, in the XFL, and
yep,
soccer as well, and maybe something to look forward to in the future for the Blues, right? So
let's hope so.
Yeah. So, but also let's go SLU, let's go Mizzou as they approach the March Madness times, and we'll. We'll probably preview that a little bit next week as well. But until next time, it was great talking to you guys. We will see you here next time here on the Hometown Losers Podcast.
Hey, guys, this is Adam. Just want to say thanks for listening to the Hometown Losers Podcast. We'll see you next week as we continue our discussion of St. Louis sports.